So I am hoping these two poems from this book are not too silly for a worship service, but the sermon is fairly serious, and I thought a little lightness for the readings might be good. And Judith Vorst, I think, is just a wonderful poet and writer. The first one, Too Young to be 70. Deep in my heart, I believe I'm too young to be 70. There are times when I'm wearing my baseball cap and my jeans that I can even imagine that glimpsed from the side, I might be mistaken for someone who could still be in her teens, or maybe the mother of teens, late 30s, early 40s, middle 50s. I think I could do the middle 50s just fine. Like that actress who, when asked how she could be 54 when her son was 48, replied, "My son lives his life and I live mine." And the second one is called Teeth. Though I brush twice a day and am deeply committed to flossing, I'm finding that I and that most of the people I know now require not only a regular family dentist, but also two dentists, one endo and one perio, at costs far surpassing our annual mortgage payments. In states of mind ranging from panic to weak in the knees, I've acquired a mouthful of crowns, veneers, bridges, and implants. So I'll be at my best when photographers tell me, say cheese. And I'm smiling a gapless smile because I've had bonding to close up those spaces in which spinach used to repose. And I'm smiling a confident smile because at the moment I'm sure nothing awful is going on under my nose. And yet, when I think of the drill, the Novocaine needles, those sharp metal instruments human rights watchers should ban, when I think about having to open wider and wider and how I feel worse when I'm finished than when I began, and when I consider my grandchildren's college tuitions and the fortune in dentists and donnas I cannot bequeath, I wonder if maybe I should have at least considered a water glass and set of removable teeth. Whole book like that. When I was 53, I was asked by a counter person at McDonald's if I wanted the senior special. "I'm not a senior," I said. "Oh, our senior meals are for those 55 and older," she explained. "I'm not 55," I replied, wondering how she could possibly think I was that old since I was still holding out the hope that I looked 49. Today I regularly ask for senior discounts everywhere I go. I ask because now, 16 years later, I really am old. Granted, I am young old, but still by anyone's standards am certainly well within the category of senior and senior discount land. In fact, as the sermon title indicates, this spring I will turn 70. I am not happy about it, but I am trying to accept it, as I'm also trying to anticipate so much of what aging will mean for the years ahead. For the immediate future, I have a plan. I am going to retire this summer, and I'm in the process of selling my condominium in Newton, and I am hoping to move probably to Brookline. While I am no stranger to moving or to the disorientation that moving brings, this move feels particularly momentous. I know that I'm approaching it with far more trepidation than previous moves, even though heading to the city is a kind of retirement gift that I'm giving to myself. But gift or not, I'm still ambivalent. I wish I could just embrace the excitement that I want to feel about this new chapter in my life, and sometimes I can, but always lurking around the edges are feelings of uncertainty, anxiety, and occasionally even dread. Every single feeling that Joel mentioned last week, I am feeling too. It must go with the territory. On good days, I fantasize about having unlimited time for museums and music and plays and travel and family visits and lunch with friends and courses and volunteering and unencumbered space and time to read and write. What could be better? But more often, I worry. I worry about money and how I'll live on my modest retirement. I worry about how I'll do without the safety net of work and the structure it provides. And finally, I worry about whether 6 months or a year into retirement, I will feel as though I'm free-floating through space, wondering if my untethered life has any meaning to me or anyone else. But I am trying to keep a sense of balance about the losses and the gains retirement will bring. For the first time in 25 years, I will not be a parish minister serving a church. And what will that be like? Will I still be a minister in any real sense? My professional identity isn't everything, but it is a major part of who I am, and I don't want to lose it. There are so many unknowns ahead, so much to worry about, but my single biggest worry about the future is money. If I'm careful, I should be fine until I'm about 85, but then what? Do I join eHarmony, hoping for a companionable late marriage? Don't laugh. Do I depend on my children? Heaven help me. Do I go back to work? Do I conveniently die? I know I've already told you about the meeting with the HR director of a publishing company that had just hired me when I was 24 and being told that if I worked for this company, Prentice Hall, until I turned 65, I would be a millionaire because of their profit-sharing plan. And at the time, I thought it was funny, the idea that I would ever be 65. And I don't regret not having committed my life to Prentice Hall, but right now, $1 million has great appeal. So the thing we're never supposed to talk about, money, is sure to be a constant concern. And then there's time. Will unlimited free days and free nights turn out to be a blessing or a curse? I remember once reading a quotation that said, "Millions yearn for immortality, yet don't know what to do with themselves on a rainy Sunday afternoon." Is that what retirement will be like? Too many rainy Sunday afternoons. Writer Penelope Lively says, "Old age is not a place one can visit and then leave." But I realize that's exactly what I want to do. I want to visit for a while and see if I like it, see how it goes. And if I don't like it, well, then go and do something else. People say 70 is just a number, but for me, it's a number that feels very much like a 90-degree turn towards a very different life. And I think I will like this new life of city living, of walking everywhere and taking public transportation and having easy access to all the places I want to go. No more driving from Newton to Jordan Hall, only to find the garages full and no on-street parking and then turning around and going home. Or finding a spot in the lot for $20 for 2 hours. Nope. Once I am in the city, it will just be a matter of hopping on the T, flashing my senior discounted Charlie card, and I'm on my way. I do love cities. I love the energy and the busyness and the convenience, and after 40 years of suburban living, I am ready for the bright lights. But this 90-degree turn also means real compromise. In theory, I am willing to sacrifice space for location, but in reality, I have been looking at apartments that are so small they could easily fit in my living room that I have now. There is much to be said for downsizing, for decluttering, and I'm all for it. In fact, I'm currently reading a book on minimalism. But I realize this move will mean giving up much, if not most, of what I now own, from furniture to pictures to cherished sets of china. And while it's easy to scoff at our attachment to material things, a first world problem, if ever there was one, the fact is they are our things, and they matter. My things are alive with memories. My grandmother served Thanksgiving dinner on the dishes I now have that I'll soon have no room to store. Every wall in my spacious condominium is covered with framed posters and pictures from museums in France and Italy, each one a reminder of an earlier and happier time in a marriage now over. A dining room table that comfortably fits 10 or even 12 if we squeeze together and has hosted decades of family meals has not a ghost of a chance of fitting into a 500-square-foot studio. What was it William James said about one's things? Quote, "The loss of possessions gives a sense of the shrinkage of personality, a partial conversion of ourselves to nothingness." His perception is dramatic, to be sure, but the feel is right on. We know that aging is synonymous with loss, and this drastic downsizing feels like the first big step in a trove of losses yet to come. Right now, I envision the next 5 years as being a very independent time, which I welcome, but then I also worry, will I be too much on my own with too little expected of me? So much of the goodness of life comes from belonging and feeling connected. And how do we do that once the children are grown, the marriage is gone, and someone else is sitting at our desk? And it's not just a sense of connection that brings life's deep satisfactions. They also come from feeling that we're contributing and that what we do and who we are in the world actually makes a difference. You know, I've wondered if previous generations had this kind of angst about aging. I wish I had asked my grandmother what it was like for her to be old, but I was only 12 when she died, and it never occurred to me to ask her that question. She and my grandfather grew old together in the house they had almost always lived in their entire marriage. Today, there's a name for that. It's called aging in place. My grandparents just aged without any fuss, and sometime in her late 70s, my grandmother had a stroke and died, and my grandfather died 6 months later. We always thought he had died of a broken heart, but the medical diagnosis was lymphoma. There were no 90-degree turns for my grandparents. They just quietly got old. And now I look back on their lives with a sense of whimsy and envy, too. In addition to my immediate retirement plans, I also have a mid-range and long-range plan, each neatly divided into 5-year segments, a little reminiscent of Chairman Mao's Great Leaps Forward during the Cold War. So far, Plan 2 and 3 only involve reassessing my needs at approximately 5-year intervals and making realistic adjustments, maybe a retirement community, maybe a warmer climate, not really hot, but warmer, and continuing to just live where I am and age in place. The free-floating, nebulous quality of aging, along with the uncertainty of getting old, strikes fear into the hearts of people like me, who need to feel they have at least some control over their lives and their futures. With these five-year plans, I know I am attempting the impossible, trying to take hold of my old age and insist it follow an orderly pattern, insist on some discipline and clarity and predictability, and who am I kidding? The unknown factors of retirement alone scare me half to death, never mind the physical changes and conditions of aging, from memory loss to joint replacement to the increased likelihood of life-threatening illnesses. But the good news is that I am not aging on my own. My friends are all right there with me. They are as old as I am, and they are all facing exactly the same questions. And while aging may be new for us, we need to remember we are not pioneers on this path. How many of you are retired? Oh, look, role models everywhere. The cycle of life comes full circle. Birth, life, death, for me, for you, for all of us. For the immediate future, I expect to be on the go, doing what? I'm not quite sure, but at least in my soon-to-be on public transportation location, I'll be positioned to do it. And then in years to come, I expect that I will pull back and look for satisfactions closer to home. But whoever knows what chance or fate or fortune will bring. And because we don't know, our best bet always is to be present to the moment at hand. Carpe diem, says the poem written in 23 BCE. It's good advice, especially good advice for those of us who are aging and facing a future that at best is only partly in our hands. I close with a favorite quotation on Time and Life by Rick Matson. I think I may have used this before, but at my age, who can remember such things? Matson writes, "I turned 40 a while ago and came dribbling out of the locker room ready to start the second half. Glancing up at the scoreboard, I saw we were behind 7-84. And it came to me then that we're not going to win. And considering the score, I'm beginning to be glad this particular game isn't going to go on forever. But don't take this to mean I'm ready for the showers. Take it to mean I'm probably going to play one heck of a second half." I told this to some kids in the court next to mine, and they laughed, but I don't think they understood. How could they, playing in the beginning of the first quarter, only 1 point behind? Here's to all the second halves and last quarters of all of our lives. So may it be. Amen.